Hey everyone, welcome back to Cart Overflow. I'm your host, Dan Frukau, and today we have Jessica Totillo-Coster, the founder of e-commerce Badassery.
That's right. Hi.
Hey Jessica, how's it going today?
It's awesome. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. It's Friday. We're talking about e-commerce. We're talking about email. And I guess we're both New Yorkers living out of our element in other places.
Yep.
But yeah, we're in a comfort zone talking about e-commerce email. So maybe you could just start with a little bit of your background and then what you do at e-commerce Badassery.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll go really far back. And that is, I used to sleep in my new shoes as a little girl. So when I ended up, you know, going down the fashion apparel retail route, nobody was surprised. And I worked in retail for years. I owned my own brick and mortar shop. And then I got into marketing in a retail company. And I was about a year and a half in or so from, you know, I was working on their brick and mortar stuff, but we started taking e-commerce back in-house because it was just a white label commission site. And for the first 3 years of that business, I was the only employee. So I had a part-timer who packed and shipped orders, but I literally did everything else from the email and the social and the uploading product and the replenishing my product. So while it wasn't my business, it felt like it was my business. And I did cry a lot at that job, but I also learned a ton there and had the pleasure of working with some really amazing consultants who, you know, I knew stuff about e-com before. That's why they gave me the job, but I know a lot more now. And with e-commerce Badassery, I actually started this business by accident. So I'm sure we all remember when MailChimp and Shopify broke up. And there were a lot of e-commerce entrepreneurs who didn't know what to do next, right? Because it was really the only platform that they knew. And I just started talking to them about Klaviyo because I had already been using it for a few years in my day job. And I really fell in love with it. And then they started messaging me saying, well, I'm on Klaviyo, but I'm really overwhelmed. Or I just switched to Klaviyo and my emails are going in the junk box. Like, can you help me? So I did. And being in the space with all of these e-com entrepreneurs and realizing what a lack of information there was, right? There's like a lot for the super beginner. Here's how to set up your Shopify store. And then there's a lot for, you know, the multi seven, eight figure corporate businesses. But like, what about the person who started from their kitchen table, they're doing multi six, early seven figures, and they kind of got to this place, but they still don't know how to read their analytics. They don't totally understand SEO, and they're probably not sending emails regularly. And I was like, I can help these people. And so that's where I've kind of slipped on in, and it's the best job I've ever had. That's my short story.
Yeah. And now some of the credentials, you Klaviyo partner, Klaviyo elite master, I guess the term is, right? And you're actually specifically focused on female founded DTC brand, which is a cool need. I mean, it makes sense, of course, because you can like target and identify them. Does it apply to some of the different challenges or do you see different like commonalities or I guess commonalities with female entrepreneurs, which is why you target them with your brand or with?
Yeah. The main reason I target, and I'm by no means a man hater, right? At all, but there's not a lot of women in the space teaching this, right? It's a lot of bro marketing, a lot of rented Lamborghinis, a lot of like, just run Facebook ads and tomorrow you'll be a millionaire. And so they just weren't represented in the space. And because women in general, you know, we go a lot with intuition and making decisions based on how things feel. And yeah, data is so important and I teach data all the time, but also life has taught me that intuition is actually really strong and powerful and very often correct. I like to use the data to like prove that the intuition was on point. And so I think that because I work that same way, I'm better able to understand how they approach business. And I just wanted to give them a space where that was okay. And they could feel safe doing that. Yeah. While still learning the hard stuff.
But now I'd love to dig into the technical part of Klaviyo, where you're saying like, okay, there's a gap. Like you had the super beginner stuff, then advanced stuff in the middle. Like maybe we can start with your audit process, because you know, everything, you know, you kind of want to do your full due diligence before you start recommending any changes. But what does that checklist look like as you're like looking into a brand Klaviyo account? And if you can kind of like walk through what some of the best practices are as it relates to the flows, the segments, the campaigns.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's kind of two main things, right? There's like the super nitty gritty tech stuff of how Klaviyo actually works. And then there's the marketing side of it. So let's talk the nitty gritty Klaviyo stuff first, and then we can kind of dive into the marketing piece. Is one, the hardest part of Klaviyo is the fact that you are only limited by your imagination in most cases, right? Which is very overwhelming. But the engine of Klaviyo is really understanding the triggers and the filters and the segmentation opportunity and profile properties. So the first thing I'm going to look at is, you know, how much of that are they utilizing, and are they utilizing it correctly? And it's a little hard to just get into a podcast here, but, you know, even one example is the way you actually name your emails in a flow so that you can look at the reporting properly. So like by default, if you use one of those pre-built Klaviyo flows, the name of the individual email is like email one. But when you go and look at the report, the name of that email is what it reports on. So you don't know, is it email one in abandoned cart or welcome or browse, right? So like those little things to actually help you better read your data are so, so important. So if that's you and you're on Klaviyo, like go run through your flows right now and go update them to like abandoned cart, email one, browse abandonment, email one. That's going to really help you better dig into your numbers. And, you know, there's, when you think about what triggers a flow, you've got when they're added to a list or they're added to a segment, and then you have the event or the action that the customer took. So they viewed a product or they added to cart or they placed an order. And those are so powerful to create the right message at the right time to the right person. And so I'm really looking at how are they utilizing that? Are they taking advantage of it? In most cases, especially the post-purchase, I see gets missed a lot. And that's an amazing opportunity to nurture that relationship with your customer. And how do we think about getting them back the next time, right? And I know you talk about retention a lot. I was listening to an episode, I think it was an analytics episode, that really talked about retention. And that's where I love to lean into. So use Klaviyo to the best of its ability, and using all those features is so, so important. So that's the first thing I'm really looking at.
For sure. But when you say that people will miss the post-purchase like flow as an opportunity, are you saying that people don't send a post-purchase email?
Yes.
Oh, got it.
Very often I see they're not even set up. It's crazy. You know, when there's something that you do all the time, you just assume everyone else is doing it too, right? And you kind of take all that knowledge for granted. And that's where I was when I really started getting into this and, you know, as a consultant. And then I realized, oh my gosh, like there's this whole world of email that so many e-commerce entrepreneurs are missing. And the post-purchase is definitely one of those.
So what would that look like to you? And we can start with this. And I thought maybe we can also like touch on, you mentioned abandoned cart, welcome, and others I would definitely love to hear about. But specifically for post-purchase, in order to, I mean, the goal there is, I think, probably like customer success or happiness, right? And then ultimately, as that feeds to extending lifetime value by getting repeat purchases. But what does that flow look like unfolding after the purchase is made? So you're saying like the trigger is purchase of a product, right? And then like, what would it look like in terms of content and timing?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is going to depend wildly on your business and your products, but I'll give you a couple examples of things that I have set up with clients and tools that Klaviyo has to make this way easier. So one of the first struggles I think is you know, how do I, if I have this wide assortment of product, how am I going to send like the right message? I'm going to have all these crazy branches and stuff like that. So if you're thinking of that, don't worry. I'm going to tell you how you can get around that super easy in Klaviyo. That's number one. But when I'm approaching the post-purchase, I always ask, what does the customer need to know and understand to have a really great experience with your product so they come back and leave you a positive review, right? Like just because they place the order, your job is not done. And I always use this example of my previous job. The product that we sold was a little bit technical in some cases. And there was this one product in particular that we used to get all of these customer service requests and questions, and they wanted to return it. But this was like brand new to the market and it was blowing up everywhere. It was huge. And we were like, I don't understand. Why do our customers not like this? What we figured out is it was user error and we did not do a good job of making sure that they had a good experience. So we would spend so much time, right, talking to them in customer service chat, where if we had just put in an email, we could have avoided all of that. So if you have experiences like that in your business, that's the first place you can think of, or you can go to for this data to figure out what to put in these. But I usually, right, in that very first email, and I usually trigger it off of the fulfilled event versus the purchase event, depending upon how long it takes you to fulfill, let them get that shipping email and be really excited. And then the next day you can send them more info. And what's cool about Klaviyo is when that fulfilled order event happens, Klaviyo has a ton of data. They know all the products that that person bought and what collections they came from. So when you're creating the content for maybe it's your top five products, or maybe you only have six products in your assortment, or maybe it's like six main collections, you can use dynamic content in those emails so that the person who receives the email will only see the content that's relevant. So let me give you a little example. I worked with a client who had six handbag styles. They all had different features and functions and things like that. So in the post-purchase, we created content for all six of the items, and those individual blocks, right, would only be visible to now, the user.
Like I love the dynamic tables
product.
And
so product A versus like product
personalizing
B.
It, making it more relevant, which only makes sense, of course, because you know exactly what they purchased.
And you don't know how to set those up.
I'm just curious Google about their help center, cross sell or upsell afterwards. So say it's like 100 SKUs.
For that particular
would you
product,
have
it was making sure they
cross sell based on
all of the features
each of those 100
bag, right?
Products,
so
or like
they had a really
yeah. I mean, I assume that.
Another example is, I have a client and we're refreshing her emails right now. She sells DIY nail polish kits. Super cool. But if you've never done it before, like everyone's afraid they're going to mess it up. There's all these different color recipes. It's like super overwhelming. So we have now created content for each different color kit. It takes them to a playlist on YouTube where they can go through all the recipes and get all the how-to help and things like that. So we know that even if they get stuck, like we've given them the content that they need to kind of hold their hand. So that's, you know, like the main way I use like this post-purchase educational email. And then you can start thinking about, well, like what happens after that, right? How often are they maybe going to come back and buy this? And your data will tell you. And in the beginning, you just have to guess. Take your best educated guess and like, don't get hung up on it. And then as you get more data, you can learn more. When are they going to need a complimentary product? Wouldn't it be so much easier to just put that in a flow to send automatically to say, hey, I know you bought product A, you're really going to like product B. And it keeps you top of mind, right? So even if they don't buy from that,
it's a balance though, right? Because
email,
you want to simplify
example,
it. You don't want to like
when they're ready,
go too much into the details
the
for things that might
of,
not matter, but you also need to personalize because ultimately that's
so
where
that's how
if
I
you
would
make those incremental gains, it might differentiate from competitors. So if we dive into personalization, what exactly does that look like? Kind of like at a high level, like how are you creating different segments dynamically? And then filtering down to the content of the email itself, what have you learned kind of like from the tests of personalizing things?
Oh.
And yeah, what do you recommend kind of yeah, like as a best practice?
That would be a nightmare. So I'll give you an example. My previous job, we had more than 100 SKUs, and we probably had 3 to 4 main customer avatars, right? And they were all buying our product kind of for different reasons. So at that point, I go at the collection. Like, how can I go at the collection level? And maybe what are 1 to 3 items that anyone who purchased from collection A would want? You can also think of it as, what would you put maybe as an after checkout cross-sell? That's like no brainer. They're like, oh yeah, if I'm buying this, I totally need this. If you can keep it that easy of a purchase, it'll be really successful. One of the things I think that we get overwhelmed with, right? And even I tell my audience this as well, like, yeah, you hear me talking about this stuff, but like, you don't have to get so granular all the time. You won't see the ROI. You might actually miss opportunity. Like when it gets to like really hyper specific segments and things like that. So just try and pull out a little bit and get more of a broader view there and simplify. Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. So I think one of the things that gets people hung up, right? And what I used to always try and do, but because I had such a wide product assortment and I had these different customer avatars, it was very hard to personalize based on what they purchased specifically, right? There's some opportunity for that, like we talked about in the post-purchase. And obviously with campaigns, if you're launching a new product, you're probably gonna have this one group that's gonna be like way more interested that you can send more emails to. Doesn't mean you don't send it to the other people. You just send the ones interested in that more emails, right? Because they're not going to get fatigued as quickly. But what I have found to be much more impactful and have a higher ROI when you've got limited time and resources is to focus on where they're at in the journey with your business instead. So think about those people who are on your list and engage with your emails.
Yeah, I was always curious about,
right? What did they need to get over that initial?
If you hear, okay, you want to kind of match the content to where they are in their customer journey. But if they haven't purchased, like, how are you doing that? Sounds like you're doing it based on email engagement.
How do you
who knows how much that might have changed with iOS 15, where less data is available,
those VIP people or you're really who are just measuring like they buy based often, on they buy rate, frequently, which, they spend like a lot of money with you.
Point or two.
How do you get them to be your advocate?
Yeah, and help it sounds
with customer
like your suggestion for personalization so is almost an RFM or recency frequency monetization segmentation.
It's going to be so where much you're looking easier. At right?
How much they've purchased, and when they've purchased, and then basically like how much.
Now that doesn't so mean kind of, that every week when you sit down to send a campaign or free, depending upon how often like you send, that you have to create content
and
y-axis for all of these different
money
groups.
And,
that's
and,
exhausting,
I guess,
and you
time.
Won't see the benefit of it. Instead, what I used to do is, and I would send, 3 to 4 emails a week to 300,000 subscribers, something like that. On a quarterly-ish basis, when I didn't have a big launch or a new product or a sale or something happening, is when I would sit down and create content for all those different groups I was just talking about. And I would create an email specifically for them. Couple of things. Take away all the pretty. You don't need all the graphics and the GIFs or the GIFs, however you pronounce it. It does like those full image emails, the really big guys can do that because they can stand, potential spam. And I don't know, jury's still out on whether images trigger spam or not. Depends which which marketing person you talk to, but just make it more personal, text-based. You can still have your logo in there and all of that, but make it about them. Hey, I see that you've been, you know, opening all of our emails and checking out our website, but you haven't purchased yet. What's holding you back? How can we help? Maybe you want to put an offer in there. Maybe you want to add FAQs in there. So think about what that person at that stage needs, and those will convert so, so well for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Yes. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I mean, ultimately, that's how a message gets ingrained, right, is over a number of repetitions. I kind of want to segue from personalization.
Yeah, and you know, you can get super granular with this too. So, you know, if you're just attempting this, like, start with those people who engage a lot but have never purchased.
On a quiz builder, treat those VIPs really well, and then those,
you know, the people who have purchased once.
If we're talking about the bag brand that you were working with,
you know, once you can get them to make their second and like their third purchase, like, those are your customers.
All that gets
one purchase does not make a customer.
An event variable.
So you still need to do some work on
that you're talking about,
and
then also
as
custom
you get
property.
More sophisticated, then you can kind of go into
so,
all of these
yeah,
other,
it's,
like, you know,
like
the
main value, of course, is
just about
to recommend a product, make
like
that purchase process easier. But then also on the back end, if they did purchase, then you have all this, like,
to consider
what's called zero-party data,
your, right?
You know, shared directly
generally,
from
the bigger your
shopper
list, the more products you have, the more emails and segmentation you can do.
But I'd love to know, I mean, whether you use a quiz or not, like, how might a brand think about using this? They're gathering this data.
Do
and
those
then,
main little groups we talked about, and that's really all you
what
need.
What to do? Like, how can we, you know,
and
bump our
if you're
email
not
revenue
sure
up from 20%
what
to 25,
need,
30%, really just
go
by
look
using this
at
data.
Your comments on social media, your product reviews, your customer service inquiries. That's your data, right? That's your customer telling you where they're getting stuck, why they're hesitating, what questions they have. It could be the experience on your website, right? Maybe there's information missing, but I will tell you, like, people don't read. So you can't repeat, like, answers to FAQs. You can't repeat them too much. You really can't. So put them in all the places. I always joke, like, working in retail stores for so many years, like, a customer would come in and you'd have signs everywhere for this sale. And then they get to the cash wrap and you tell them, and they're like, oh, I didn't know you had a sale. It's literally plastered everywhere. But then a different customer comes in, you tell them the sale and they're like, I can read. And I'm like, sweet. You know, so you can't win that one. So just repeat, repeat, repeat. Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Love a quiz. Love, love, love a quiz, especially if you can get that data into Klaviyo. That is so clutch. And if you guys don't know what he's talking about in terms of profile properties, like you can have an unlimited number of profile properties on a Klaviyo customer or email, right? Each profile equals an email. And that data can be used for segmentation, for dynamic content and personalization, like we were talking about.
It needs to capture an email or a phone number.
Emails then off of those
to create a contact, but then once that is sent through, then all the associated data captured in the quiz goes through to Klaviyo.
If you go back again, you see me on video, I'm just like lighting up at it.
30 days or something.
So that quiz data,
any answers change, then
you can use it for
caveat that it overwrites the previous data, but
right away. Hey, if this is what you're looking for, this is the product for you. But now when you have a new
stores of data that marketers were using to identify and target their ideal customer.
Caution a little bit about
no longer
hyper segmentation
as much. So it's really important to have this direct channel. Of course, that's why email is the gold standard, the only channel. But then
push that,
what are you doing with it?
And
I think that
just like
I've seen some very interesting stats in terms of
you have a new collection
what people are willing to share.
If you build
and they're willing to share personal data, but there is an expectation
that you can talk about it,
that data
being
used to create a better user experience.
Group of people who have raised their hand and said, yes, I'm interested in this specific thing. And so having that quiz data works the same way. And it will help you identify who really cares about what, because viewing a product, okay, they're probably interested, but if they just viewed it, well, they're not that interested. Well, okay, but if they added it to their cart, then they're more interested. And then if they started checkout, they're even more interested. And then of course, if they purchased it. But if in a quiz, like they literally said, I'm interested in this, that's worth so much more than a view or an add to cart, in my opinion. I have a quick question about this little quiz app here that's going to integrate with Klaviyo. How often is the data synced? Is it immediate? Is it real time? Yay! Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that's so powerful. I love that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I wanted to wrap up with some actionable ideas, because I know you see a slew of brands, you're deep in the weeds.
Yeah.
What are some of the biggest mistakes that you see? You mentioned some earlier where you're kind of surprised, because for you it's like standard practice, but not everybody knows that, like a naming convention. Some big mistakes that might be siphoning off money that are easy fixes. Is there a benchmark unsubscribe that you're looking for?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah, so, so important. One of the things that I always like to do is set up some sort of managed preferences center where they can tell me, you know, what do they want to hear about? How often do they want to hear from me? What are they interested in? If I've got a really wide product assortment, for example, like what collections do you care about? The caveat there is if you do that, you have to honor it, right? And so, yes, that puts a little bit more work on you as the marketer or the CEO or whoever's wearing the email marketing hat. But the value of that to the customer is so, so important. And, you know, it's funny, obviously you brought up iOS 14 and 15. Me personally, I want these apps to track my behavior because I don't want irrelevant ads while I'm scrolling Facebook, right? But I think it's like 70% of people or something opted out, right? So because they don't trust Facebook is really the main reason, right? Most people have a love-hate relationship with it. You as the brand, you have a much closer relationship with that customer. And so they are willing to give you more information and let you know what they care about because they trust you. And so you have to maintain that trust by consistently matching what they asked for. So that's the only thing, but it's worth the time investment to do it. So don't let that be something that holds you back from getting more specific. Yeah. 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 Not sending enough emails. That's the number one in terms of. So according to SendGrid, who not only is an email platform, but is also a back end for other email platforms. So they see a lot of emails. You want it to be under 0.3%. That's what the email service providers, Hotmail, Gmail, Yahoo, et cetera, are looking at. And if you are under 0.3%, then you're good. Now, the one caveat there is if your list is really small, you're going to be higher than that when like two people unsubscribe, right? So don't get too nervous about that. But as you're getting into like that 10K size list, that's kind of where you want to be. And what I recommend you do is pay attention to that, obviously, and don't just go from sending like no emails to sending three emails a week. People are going to be like, whoa, what is happening? The thing that upsets customers and people is unmet expectation. So you need to ease them into it a little bit. So if you're only sending one email a week now, move it up to two for a couple of weeks, see how that goes, then go to three, et cetera, and see how high you can go. And then when you notice that your engagement is dropping a lot or your unsubscribes are going up, then you can kind of pull back a little bit. So that's definitely the biggest thing. Because remember, not everyone is seeing your email all the time.
Send now, more granted, emails. In my mind, the first thing that
likely to be inflated. Thank you.
I associated with iOS pricing. 15. And you know, I'm on the SaaS side. But that's it. The first
you
lever
can use
for
the same message
revenue,
and resend
like,
them.
Charge more until you can no longer charge more. And
my favorite
in a very similar
to
vein
do
to what you're talking
you don't
about,
have any, you
increase
feel like
price, increase
to
price,
say, that's why
until you
emails.
See a drop off in conversion rate. You might see a drop off in conversion
really
rate, but
well
you might still
past.
Make more revenue because you're charging more.
Change it up, tweak it a little bit so it feels fresh and new, and just resend it. And if it generated a lot of revenue then, it's probably going to generate a good amount of revenue now. Another thing is not catching them early enough in the abandonment process. So what I think some people get confused about on Shopify, if you're integrated with Klaviyo, and this is true, I think in most email platforms, is it's not an abandoned cart, it's an abandoned checkout. So they have to hit that start checkout button before it gets recognized. But you can catch them earlier with a browse abandonment or a true cart abandonment, right? Where they just press the add to cart button. So it's one extra step. If you're on Shopify, you have to install an additional script. But if you, you know, go to their help desk, it's super easy. Just copy and paste. It's so simple and catch them earlier.
That's what it's all about, right? Especially those days like where you're like, oh my, the sales are not ticking up like we want to, but you got to zoom out.
And I know that a lot of CEOs
but I did have a question kind of like on the granular level about browse abandonment.
And if you don't have customers,
how long are you waiting
about it?
Or you do that, and then do you need
right?
a
like why wouldn't you do it
or a
try
filter
it. And if,
to
if
ensure
they complain,
that they don't
you can
purchase because you don't
want to specifically if you want just by putting a filter in your flow
in
or
end.
You can turn it off, but like you're straight up leaving money on the table if you don't use browse abandonment. And the creepiness factor really it's people who are already on your list. So it's not like they just, you know, keystroked their email somewhere and you like swiped it and sent them an email. Like, no, these are people who have already shopped with you. So it's really not that bad. Those would be like my first two things. And then of course that, you know, that post-purchase, so important. Right. Yes. Oh my gosh. I got to touch on that really quick. So I think we get caught up in like individual KPIs, right? And we really need to look at them more holistically and how they all work together. So for instance, when people always ask me like, what's the best time to send an email? And I'm like, well, it depends. Send a lot of emails, try different times and you'll figure it out. But like, you can't only look at open rate or only look at click rate. You have to look at how much revenue it's generating as well. Or you may also find a particular traffic source, for example. Maybe it brings you a ton of traffic, but it doesn't convert that well, or they spend less money. And so you're ultimately not as profitable.
But if in a session they view, say, three products,
you know, don't
how do you
look
determine
at these things
which
individually.
Product is
really
included in the browse abandonment?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yes, 100%. So usually how I set this up is my browse abandonment is going to go 1 hour after they viewed the product. And there's going
to
be a condition in there,
Jessica,
that says they have not started checkout. So it's technically started checkout 0 times since starting this flow. And then that way, if they do start checkout, then they'll move on to the abandoned checkout email. And the abandoned checkout emails, I said it wrong. So abandoned checkout is 1 hour, browse abandonment is 2 hours, because I want that abandoned checkout to have preference there. And I also will put a condition that says they have not been in this flow in the last 30 days. Really important, because the browse abandonment is viewing a product, right? And you're going to view multiple products while you're shopping. So it's multiple events and you don't want them to get multiple emails. That would be obnoxious. And the thing to understand about Klaviyo is the trigger of your email, right? Whatever triggers it, whatever filters you put there, as people move through the flow, right before Klaviyo sends that email,
you for
it's going to go back up to the trigger and make sure that customer still qualifies. So whatever you put at the top will remove people from the flow and you don't have to worry about.
All right,
like,
Jessica, thank you so much. This is fun.
Something, right? So you'll say they haven't started checkout and you'll be good. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's always going to be the first one, right? Because it's going to trigger the first time and then they're going to be in waiting because until that 2 hours passes. So it's always going to be one product, but all the products people look at get attached to their profile under a section called recently viewed products. And if you look for recently viewed products in the Klaviyo help documentation, you can actually, there's a code there that you can put that in the email and it will dynamically show them the other products that they've recently looked at as well. So you can show them both. Oh my gosh. I would need all day to nerd out on Klaviyo, but yes, all those little intricacies that just, it already feels personal, right? Well, you don't have to get like, let the tool do the work for you. It's the same thing with Klaviyo's product recommendations as well. Like they have a pretty decent algorithm based on all the data. Like it has all the data about your customers and what they're doing on your website. So it can predict like what product this particular person is most likely to purchase from you. That's pretty cool. Like there are other tools that do this and maybe it's more sophisticated than Klaviyo's right now. But I will say, I just filled out a survey from Klaviyo asking me about how I use their product recommendations. So it looks like it's on the roadmap to make some updates, which is really exciting as well. So that's another thing. If you don't know what to send, like come up with a really cool subject line, throw some product recommendations in there and like, you're good. Cause it's just going to show them what they're most likely to buy anyway. Yeah, so I am e-commerce badassery in all the places. My website, Instagram, and I also have a podcast. Those are the places I hang out the most. Yeah, thank you. It was great to be here.
And that's the episode for today. Thanks so much for listening all the way to the end. We love you for it. If you found anything valuable at all or want to share your feedback, please leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can also just drop us a line, hello@cartoverflow.com. We'd love to hear your feedback or suggestions so we can cover it in a future episode. All right, see you next time.